Chapter 13, where do we go from here? From patriarchy to gender egalitarianism. The downfall of humanity. Humanity, what an atrocity. Insatiable hunger for power and an absurd disorder passed generationally to the next new world order. No framework for equality can remedy the asphyxiated majorities. There is no redemption from the swine and greed. Freedom is not a goal we will ever achieve. With the thought of this future life, I am completely breathless with disbelief. Chai Annie. A Song for Sheroes by Bob McNeil. Women make men comprehend. Women make men comprehend. Women make men comprehend that each sister has a Harriet Tubman prepared to seek a place where men do not abuse their queens, a place that erects jewels of respect. Women make men comprehend. Women make men comprehend. Women make men comprehend that each sister has a Shirley Chisholm prepared to shake and make every state understand that liberation must not become a membership card only given to men. Women make men comprehend. Women make men comprehend. Women make men comprehend that each sister has a Kamala Harris showing all chauvinists and misogynists they are unwanted as a virus. Women make men comprehend. Women make men comprehend. Women make men comprehend that each sister has a Dr. Mae C. Jemison entering a Nassau shuttle raft that ascends to a time where gender mistreatment ends. Women make men comprehend. Women make men comprehend. Women make men comprehend. Women make men comprehend. To answer the proverbial question, where do we go from here, is by far one of the most deeply pondered questions of our time. In an era of enormous pain, uncertainty, devastating loss, and hapless nihilism, it becomes an existential inquiry plaguing the hearts and minds of humanity, especially when we are faced with personal, political, religious, national, and/or global crisis. In response to where do we go from here, from patriarchy to gender egalitarianism, my response is arguably a complex and ubiquitous one, one that far exceeds the scope of this discourse. However, in an effort to answer the question, notwithstanding the earlier suggestion to dismantle oppressive patriarchal and misogynistic systems and structures, we must go back to humanity's origin story. In Chapter 4, How Did We Get Here?, we discovered that early humans lived in a gender egalitarian society, but thousands of years later, evolved into a patriarchal one. We explained the reason for the regression was largely due to the misinterpretation of the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden in Genesis 2. Thus, we begin this chapter with a nuance, reinterpretation of the story, and illustrate how love and respect for women's humanity is a viable antidote to the return of gender egalitarianism. Most people, even those who are not members of the Christian, Jewish, or Islamic faith, are familiar with the story of Adam and Eve. In my view, the story is one of the most consequential stories ever told, a story that changed the trajectory of history. Retelling the story of Adam and Eve. Did you ever wonder what the Garden of Eden was like? What the conversation Adam and Eve had after they disobeyed God and were kicked out of the garden? I did. I also wondered what they would say about the condition of our world today. In my childlike imagination and wonder, I will give you a sneak peek into the garden and embellish the story with a bit of mythical theology. In my story, I shared how the art of storytelling was passed on to me from my ancestors. So please allow me to use my creative liberty and license and share with you a fictitious version of the story, one in which I interview Adam and Eve as if they were seated in my living room. I call the interview One Conversation, and I act as an investigative journalist and reporter named Bryn with HWG News. I introduce you to the story's three protagonists, Adam and Eve, which some biblical scholars refer to as the first parents of humanity, and the creator of the universe, the divine light. Also, no story would be worth its weight in gold if it did not have an antagonist. In this story, the antagonist is the voice in the wind. We begin our conversation with a sneak peek at how I imagine the Garden of Eden may have looked, smelled, tasted, felt, and sound like. Sneak peek into the garden. Once in the Garden of Eden lived the first woman and man named Adam and Eve. The name Adam represented the sun formed out of the red earth and everything man, and Eve, mother and source of life and everything woman. The garden was a matchless beauty of inexplicable love and illuminating light. It was an infinite world way beyond our wildest dreams and imagination. A magical place with rainbow-kissed skies, captivating majestic white clouds, and fertile soil nourished by sounds of dancing rain. There were rays of glorious golden sunlight, summoning them each morning like clockwork to rise and shine. Fields of kaleidoscope flowers tantalized their senses with sweet aroma as they quietly nap on soft, welcoming mats of bright green grass, and like magic, they became one with the earth. There were refreshing streams and the steady smell of clean air, breathing life in and out of their lungs, and miles of the most beautiful, pristine sand and beaches to play and bask in. It was a remarkable place with ripples of splashing waves, showering them with calming ocean spray. It was ecstasy. Throughout the day, they kicked back and enjoyed the tranquil sights and sounds of glistening waterfalls, carrying nutrients to plants and pouring healthy oxygen into lakes and rivers. Scores of breathtaking tropical fish and sea creatures swim in the deepest blue ocean imaginable. And they show off their finesse, shouting, "Come on in, the water is fine." An early morning assortment of lively chirping birds flapping their wings serenaded them with an orchestra of classic and jazzy songs of exhilarating praise. A hodgepodge of great and small mythical creatures roam free, reminding them of the Creator's love of nature and all creation. Swarms of laborious bees pollinating flowers for food consumption and simply elegant and freedom-loving butterflies permeate the air with divine grace. As evening curtains drew near, billions of mind-boggling galaxies dance in the moonlight, and the brightest stars sparkle and shelter them with starry-eyed wonder. Full moons, like cozy, warm blankets, comfort them while they slept until daybreak. It was a sacred place. A holy place, overwhelming with untethered joy, immense laughter, sprinkled with the Creator's divine radiance and love. It was nirvana. It was a terrestrial paradise. It was their home. I could go on and on, but one thing I believe for sure, Adam and Eve lived in an eternally pure and blissful utopia. But one day, something happened that disrupted their beautiful reality and altered their very existence. One Conversation. Thank you, Adam and Eve, for the honor and privilege of having this important conversation. It is with much excitement and gratitude that I look forward to your testimony. As parents of humanity, we know that you alone can tell the story firsthand and shed light on how we arrived at a place where the world is in deep peril and disarray. A world where war and rumors of war, unrelenting violence, unabated poverty, and severe hatred, sickness, and disease abound. A world where the lack of empathy, compassion, and the disrespect for another human being seems normalized. And sadly, moral decadence prevails. I know this is a tall order, but we would love to hear your thoughts and insight. Eve, what do you think happened that created a world where women and girls everywhere are viewed as inferior to men in our bodies, objects of men's sexual pleasure, where women are dehumanized, objectified, and oppressed? Thank you, Bren, for having us. I'll do my best. First of all, I'd like to say you describe the garden very well, and you certainly have a wonderful imagination. Never change from that. And remember what our descendant Albert Einstein said. Imagination is more important than knowledge. For knowledge is limited to all we now know and understand, while imagination embraces the entire world and all there ever will be to know and understand. Thank you, Eve, for those kind words. The garden is a perfect place, and yes, it was our home. We ate from a daily montage of exotic, tasty fruit from every kind of tree, and a potpourri of delectable vegetables roused our appetites. One evening when Adam and I were sitting together and singing songs, the divine light appeared and spoke to us. We have created you in our image, poured our divine light within you, provided for you with an abundant source of air, food, and water, everything you need to survive and thrive. The only thing we ask of you is that you do not eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil in the center of the garden. One morning, I woke up feeling peaceful, beloved, and refreshed. I took a stroll in the garden, and suddenly a warm wind blew a cluster of multicolored leaves circling my face and hands. Like a perfectly choreographed waltz, they danced gracefully around my feet, tickling my toes. In the wind, an unfamiliar voice startled me and chanted, "Go ahead, eat it. Nobody's watching. If you eat it, you will have knowledge of all things and have power just like the divine light." I knew the voice was trying to tempt me to disobey the divine light's command, but curiosity set in and I began to imagine what it would be like knowing everything and have the same power as the Creator. So I ate of the fruit. Eve, how did it taste? Bren, it was bittersweet, nothing like the scrumptious fruit in the garden, but I still ate it and gave Adam one to eat. Adam, when Eve gave you the fruit, did you think she was giving you some new and exotic tasting fruit, one that you had not eaten in the garden before? Or did you know that it was the forbidden fruit from the tree of knowledge of good and evil that the divine light told you not to eat? No, I knew it was the forbidden fruit, but I ate it anyway. Like Eve, I wanted to know all things. I wanted to be like the divine light and have unlimited knowledge and power. Adam, when God kicked the two of you out of the garden for your disobedience, many believe you blamed Eve for giving you the fruit. Is that right? I'm afraid I did blame Eve, and I tried to deflect responsibility for my disobedience off myself and onto her, even though I knew the divine light told both of us not to eat from the tree. Thank you, Adam, for publicly owning up to your responsibility. Adam, after being ousted from the garden, the divine light told the two of you to go out, build a new world, be fruitful, and multiply. What happened next? Bren, first of all, we were devastated over the divine light's banning us from the garden. And we grieved and mourned day and night because we knew we were separated from the presence and protection of the divine light. In the beginning, it was very difficult because when we were in the garden, we had everything we needed. But in the new world, we had to build everything from the ground up. I did the hunting and Eve did the gathering. We worked together as a team day and night. Once we began farming, we no longer needed to go out and hunt for our food. And so we eventually lived a settled life. As we became savvy with tools and modernization, Eve stayed home giving birth and raising our children. When that happened, I began to see Eve differently, as weak and inferior and unworthy, even though it was a practical way for us to live and survive. I used it as an excuse to make her feel lesser than. Bryn, believe me, I knew how incredibly valuable her work at home was. Unfortunately, because of my narcissistic lust for domination and control, the unequal power dynamic seeped into our relationship and marriage. And in my eyes, Eve was a threat to my mission to rule our new world. Eve, how did that make you feel? Bryn, my heart was broken because we were lifelong partners in the garden. We were equally committed to each other and to our responsibilities. We always treated each other with the utmost love and respect. So I was angry, sad, and disappointed that Adam no longer saw me as his equal, but inferior and weak, and that his goal was to rule the new world. Unfortunately, Adam's mistreatment of me and his pathological obsession for power was passed down to generations of our sons and descendants. Some of them followed in Adam's footsteps and controlled and dominated their wives and other women. They also controlled other people, other groups of people whom they felt threatened by, for example, Native Americans and African Americans in the United States. Not only did they see them as weak and inferior, but inhuman and savages, and they tried to annihilate them and continue to make them suffer today. When we disobeyed the Creator, we had no idea that we were planting the seeds of horrible greed, evil, terror, murder, and jealousy into the new world. So much so that our first son, Cain, in a fit of jealousy and rage, murdered his brother Abel. Eve sobs. Bryn, Adam's insatiable thirst and hunger for power also introduced toxic masculinity, misogyny, demonization, and objectification of women into the new world. I have been thinking a lot about this for a long time, and I believe one of the reasons our male descendants did this was because women have the capacity to give birth and men cannot. To be a giver of life is to be like the divine light, a creator. This lack of power made some men feel inferior to our capacity to do so. I also believe our sexuality women's sexuality intimidated them. By this I mean if they wanted to have sex with women and a woman says no, some men don't like to hear that. So they force themselves upon them, which is why coerce and unwanted sex in all of its insidious forms is about power, domination, and control of women and girls' bodies, not sexual pleasure. When men beat women, it is an incredibly horrific crime against their bodies and their humanity. However, the crime of sexually violating a woman or a girl in the very place, the sacred womb and gateway to life, where she gives birth, to me is a deliberate act of deep hatred and rage. It is a way to destroy a woman's ability to give life. Just think about it. When a woman or a girl is raped or gang raped, some men shove all kinds of objects inside her womb. Is that really about sex? No, it's a violent and terroristic way to show their anger that women have physical, life-giving power, something they do not have, and that they need them. Bryn, I honestly believe some men would love to be able to give birth so that they can say that they have the power to create life just like the Creator. Doesn't it make you wonder why humans created Frankenstein and artificial intelligence? It's just my way of thinking about it. Eve, that is very interesting. How did your sons view you as a woman and their mother? Our sons loved me unconditionally, but so many of our male descendants viewed me as the cause of humanity's downfall. The misinterpretation of our story in the garden was used to demonize and call me evil. They said I was in cahoots with the voice in the wind, who told me to eat of the forbidden fruit, and that together, our mission was to destroy all men, eat babies, and corrupt humanity. Some said I was the gateway to hell, the reason for the Son of Man to die, and that I introduced misery into the world. Sadly, this narrative was also perpetuated by some of our descendants who were early Catholic priests. And those who identify as, and later those who identify as white male supremacists, neo-Nazis, Ku Klux Klan men, skinheads, white Christian nationalists, and others. Because they felt that way, they believed all women were Eves and should be forcibly punished. So for that reason, they waged an all-out war against women and did so with impunity. They enslaved our precious women and girl descendants, raped and beat them, bran and bred them like animals, ripped their children from them, sterilized and experimented on them, trafficked and exploited them for monetary gain, hung and tortured them, tar and feathered them, and accused them of being witches. And so they set them on fire and burned them to the stake. And unfortunately, so much more. It hurts and makes me sick that so many of our male descendants did such horrible and inhumane acts of cruelty. The truth of the matter was that they were brainwashed to believe women are unequal and inferior to them and should remain their property. Those who do such unimaginable acts today identify themselves as PAT, short for patriarchy. They are proud that their new identity represents the rule not only of the father, but the son and anyone considered male over women. And also anyone deemed weak and inferior. Some call themselves Proud Boys and Oath Keepers in the America First movement. Their malignant narcissism, misogynistic and rabid appetite for power consumes them like an uncontrollable fire. Adam, what would you say was in the toolbox your Pats used to ensure that this happened? Eve, how much time do we have? I think about it all the time. It's so disheartening. Our Pat's primary tool is to wage war and use terror tactics against those they perceive as their enemies and unleash enormous and unlimited cruelty and terror on women, as Eve mentioned. African Americans, Native Americans, Asian Americans, Muslim Americans, immigrants, those in the LGBT community. Also, they wage war on the media, voting rights, and culture. They believe education is power, and so they wage war on educational institutions and ideas that are not like their own. They wage war and terror on brown and black bodies and on women's bodily autonomy. War on civility and common sense. War on truth, ideas that they have. War on truth and ban and continue to ban books. War on the aged, on non-Christian religious experiences. Because they equate wealth with power, they wage war on economic justice and equality, just to keep others from acquiring it. They wage war on freedom of speech and democracy in order to push their agenda of authoritarianism and fascism. They wage war on the rule of law, more on ethical conduct and environmental activism. In a fit of rage and inhumanity, they even wage war on the unspeakable gunning down and murdering of children and poisoning hundreds of children, hundreds of school-age girls to keep them from getting an education. I'm sorry, Bryn. This is just so upsetting, and there's just too many tools in their toolbox to name. However, the point is they will use any means necessary and do and say anything to win and stay in power. And anyone who they feel will prevent them from executing their master plan to create a new world of white male supremacy and Christian nationalism must be eradicated. You see, Bryn, patriarchy is a global fight for dominance. patriarchy is a global fight for domination, power, and control. Sexual terrorism waged against women and girls is merely one of the many weapons in its arsenal to silence women and deem them powerless. If I may, our pacts are like a virus spreading their cancerous sickness of toxic masculinity and steady appetite for domination, power, and control over the planet. It makes me think about Agent Smith in the popular movie, The Matrix. Agent Smith was the antagonist in the movie and was created as a computer-generated artificial intelligence. Ironically, Smith was a white male, dressed in a black suit, whose surname, Smith, which is a generic representation of white Anglo-Saxon. Smith is also capable of replicating himself in order to eliminate the chosen one, called Neo. He had contempt. Smith had contempt and disdain for humanity, comparing them to a virus that must be contained and exterminated. In contrast, Neo's mission was to fight and bring the light of humanity back from the darkness and control of the Matrix. He was sent to save humanity. And in the new world, our paths became similar to Agent Smith, replicating themselves all over the world from country to country. Many in the new world have no clue that their world is not what the divine light created, but an artificial world controlled by a matrix-like oppressive structure and system designed to keep them oppressed and in the dark, in darkness. The Pats are on mission to exterminate those who they view as a threat to their mission and keep humanity under control. Like Agent Smith, they also view humanity with disdain and contempt. Our Pats secretly deny that we are all members of the world nation family because being human represents weakness. Showing love, kindness, compassion, and empathy and forgiveness and having a deep connection with the Creator are virtues they view as useless only when it suits their purpose. They also negate the belief in oneness with humanity and nature, because the notion that there is only one human family and one race, the human race, is something their egos and narcissistic personalities find despicable and interferes with their global plan. Unfortunately, men across the world have aligned themselves with Pat's mission to rule the world. Our descendant, Caroline Griado Perez, author of the number one Sunday Times best-selling second book, Invisible Women, Exposing Data Bias in a World Designed for Men, sums up how our paths are everywhere and in every country and in every culture. She says, I always think of patriarchy as something like the film The Matrix. You are living in it every day, but you don't see it. Indeed, it is because you are living in it that you don't notice it. It's everywhere, in everything. How can you know when you don't know any different? But then, something happens to make you see the world and all its carefully organized inequality, all the hundreds, thousands of strands that make up, and suddenly you can't stop seeing it. This is what many of our descendants refer to as being woke. In other words, when we don't awaken to the truth that social injustice of any kind and anywhere is wrong, and that as humans we are purposed to open our hearts to love humanity. If not, this is a stark reality that humans are asleep and unaware of the false existence like what happened in the story of The Matrix. When Eve and I were expelled from the garden, we believed we had removed ourselves from the love and protection of the divine light. We followed our own path, and that's exactly what paths have done and continue to do. Bren, this is the very reason why the divine light forbade us to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. The Creator knew the world would result in massive chaos and suffering. Nevertheless, the divine light has the final say and issued a warning to all humanity. Woe is to those who believe evil is good and good is evil. Judgment is coming. And also a warning to those who profess religions that promote a perverted version of it. Be not deceived. The Creator will not be mocked. Eve, when you see so many of your pets determined to rule the world and destroy anyone who gets in their way, how for centuries your pets sexually terrorize women and girls, and that it is a pathology and lifestyle in so many cultures, how they use poverty and religion as a pathway to oppress, exploit, and objectify women. How does it make you feel? I am deeply grieved and disgusted. I feel horrible and ashamed that when we were living a wonderful life and a wonderful and abundant life, we became stricken with greed and power and introduced deadly pain and suffering into the new world. And to make matters worse, after Adam blamed me for the fall of humanity, our sons and daughters and descendants are now paying a price every day. Our descendant and social critic, Bell Hooks, said, "Patriarchy has no gender." And ironically, some of our female descendants who identify as white evangelical Christian nationalists are also in cahoots with the Pat's obsession for power and mission for a white male-controlled world. They even teach their children to put power over truth and to traffic in extremism and violence. Pats also compete for power amongst themselves and use conspiracy theories and propaganda to radicalize those whom they believe are outside of access to power and wealth. Bryn, as you know, the story does not end there. The good news is that our Pats and the voice in the wind did not expect women and men and their allies would fight back. They come together in solidarity and despite resistance continue to persist for social justice and gender equality. They are speaking truth to power and call to stop the violence, terrorism, and oppression of women and holding them, those in power, accountable. Their rebellion against Pat's denial of their human rights and to have a voice and representation continues today. A case in point is the story of our descendant Abigail Adams, wife of John Adams, who was one of the framers of the American Constitution and later the third president of the United States. Abigail wrote him in a letter on his way to sign the Declaration of Independence. In her letter, she sends a powerful warning as she calls him her friend. Remember the ladies and be more generous and favorable to them than your ancestors. Do not put such unlimited power into the hands of the husbands. Remember, all men would be tyrants if they could. If particular care and attention is not paid to the ladies, we are determined to foment a rebellion and will not hold ourselves bound by any laws in which we have no voice or representation. What a political pioneer and unsung hero our American descendant Abigail was. Unfortunately, Abigail's letter is seldom studied and given credit for her role in challenging the lack of inclusion of white women's rights in the Declaration of Independence. In my view, she was a political descendant who set the stage for white women in America to rise up against tyranny of white male supremacy. Subsequently, white women won their voting rights. African Americans, on the other hand, have always and continue to fight for their human and civil rights. Native Americans are demanding their land back and in some cases are winning. They also demand recognition for the genocide and hegemony committed against their language and culture, and also the call for accurate representation in history, politics, and the media. Other groups like LGBT are also fighting back and are speaking out against homosexual and transgender hate, violence, terror, and murder. Many others protest xenophobia, racism, sexual terrorization of women and girls, child pornography and sex trafficking. Also included in their resistance are major social justice movements. For example, in the United States, the movement, the abolition and civil rights movement, the movement against apartheid, Black Lives Matter, Million Moms and Million Men's March, Women's March, March Against Anti-War Movement, Indigenous Land Rights, Girls' Rights to Education, Me Too Movement, Schools Strike for Climate, and the list goes on. Brent, it makes me hopeful and proud that the first time in American history there is an African-American president, Barack Hussein Obama, and later an African-American Southeast Asian vice president named Kamala Harris, and the first time in American history an African-American Supreme Court justice, Ketanji Brown Jackson. More women governors in the U.S. ever in history. I must tell you, Brent, it does my heart good that so many of our men and women descendants are working together and not fighting for personal self-serving interests and gain, but equality, freedom, and justice for all. And lastly, our African-American descendant, novelist, poet, intellectual, social critic, James Baldwin, once said, "Please try to remember that what they believe as well as what they do and cause you to endure does not testify to your inferiority, but to their inhumanity." Thank you, Eve, for those beautiful words of hope and encouragement. Adam, do you have any final thoughts that you would like to leave us with? And what would you say to your descendants who inherited your insatiable thirst and hunger for power? First, I'm deeply remorseful for blaming Eve and aiding in creating a world that is antithetical to the Creator's love and purpose for humanity. I believe in not to make excuses for our male descendants who identify as patriarchy, but they are also victims. Because I blamed Eve, and Eve was blamed for the downfall of humanity, they believe all women are at fault and must be subdued and punished. So men must exercise power over women in their mind in order to be considered real men. I want them to know their uncontrollable fear of women has sucked the humanity out of them. Their domination and control of women is not a sign of strength, but a sign of weakness, fear, and deep feelings of inadequacy. The truth of the matter is they really believe women are more powerful than they are. Our descendant John Adams, whom Eve mentioned, disclosed his real belief about women when he wrote back to Abigail and basically said that men are only masters in name, and they're only powerful over women in theory. And women's sexuality makes women powerful over men, which is why they believe women must be subdued. Adams and the other founding fathers of the government and the church are responsible for America's original sins of genocide of Native Americans, institutionalized slavery of African Americans, white male supremacy, oligarchy, white Christian nationalism, and the misogynistic oppression and sexual exploitation of women. Lastly, I want all of our descendants to know that they must return to loving each other. Love will always defeat evil, and perfect love casts out all fear. Our descendant American musician, guitarist Jimi Hendrix said it best when he stated, "When the power of love overcomes the love of power, the world will know peace. When the power of love overcomes the love of power, the world will know peace." So no matter what, like the divine light, Eve and I love all of our descendants and would like to publicly ask all men, boys, our misguided sons, all of humanity, to forgive us for setting this tremendous tragedy of pain and sorrow in motion. Eve and I want all of our male descendants to understand that women are human first, and their gender is a divine expression of the Creator's love, that humans must see the divinity in each other and recognize that we are part of something bigger than ourselves, and that we are all interconnected with a beautiful, intricate thread of life on this planet. We also want them to know that the Divine Light's unconditional love for all of humanity never ceases and will always be present. In fact, from the beginning of time, the Divine Light broke into history, communicated with humans everywhere in countless ways, and sent prophets, singers, philosophers, sages, leaders, poets, and messengers like Dr. Martin Luther King, Mahatma Gandhi, President Jimmy Carter, Howard Thurman, Maya Angelou, Amanda Gorman, Thomas Merton, Mother Teresa, Gretchen Lundberg, and Leo DiCaprio, and many others to awaken and call humanity to return to love of each other and the environment as children of light. Unfortunately, humanity has failed to listen. And in the Christian tradition, the Divine Light sent Jesus, the universal Christ, the anointed one, the Messiah, the Son of God, the light of the world, whom some call the second Adam, to follow his fundamental teachings, to love our neighbors, to love their neighbors as themselves. Unfortunately, our paths of his time also viewed Jesus as weak, inferior, and a threat to their power. And in Jesus' efforts to save humanity from itself, they crucified him. However, due to the Divine Light's resurrection power and love, unconditional love for humanity, Jesus returned from the dead, forgave humanity for their transgressions, and promised them liberation and power over the throes of evil, darkness, and oppression. Lastly, I want to publicly ask Eve to forgive me. Adam, I forgive you, my love, and please forgive me too, Adam. That was beautiful. Thank you, Adam and Eve, for sharing your story. It has been exceedingly more than I expected and imagined. I am so appreciative of your honesty, vulnerability, and willingness to set the record straight. I believe your version of the story will open eyes of many and help women and others speak truth to power, holding power accountable, holding the abuse of power accountable. Thank you so much. Thank you, Bryn, and HWG News for having us. And bless you for the work you do in getting our message out that we are humans first, men and women, and all of our descendants are deserving of dignity, love, freedom, and respect. Adam, where are you and Eve now? We ask the divine to forgive us, and the creator welcomed us back into the garden. Our hope is that humanity will also ask for forgiveness and return to the garden. We are, as humans, the dream of the Creator, and nothing can stop it. The return to gender egalitarianism. My fictitious retelling of the story was an unconventional attempt to discover how we return to a gender egalitarian society from a patriarchal one. Arguably, the quest is a noble and aspirational challenge, but one that is not unachievable. The aim was to shed light on the couple's early relationship in which they practice equal partnership and love for each other as humans made in the image of God. How toxic masculinity undergirds the mistreatment of women and girls and those on the margins. According to the Oxford Dictionary, toxic masculinity is a set of attitudes and ways of behaving stereotypically associated with or expected of men regarded as having negative impact on men and on society as a whole. The destructive messages associated with toxic masculinity can leave men feeling entitled to engage in violence against women, unquote. Thus, the love and respect for women as members of the human family is a moral and ethical imperative necessary for resolving gender inequality and restoring humanity back to its true identity. Gender egalitarianism is not hierarchical or the act of replacing one gender for another. On the contrary, gender egalitarianism established an equal playing field and equal rights between men and women. Former United States Secretary of State Hillary Clinton asserts human rights are women's rights and women's rights are human rights. For that reason, when women and girls suffer from the onslaught of sexual terrorism, it is not only an attack on their bodies and morally and ethical wrong, but a human rights crime in violation. What does it mean to be human? To be human, in my view, is to show love, empathy, compassion, kindness, forgiveness, and practice peace and justice. To acknowledge that there is a greater power within and beyond you. According to the United Nations, human rights are rights inherent to all human beings, regardless of race, sex, nationality, ethnicity, language, religion, or any other status. Human rights include the right to life and liberty, freedom from slavery and torture, freedom of opinion and expression, the right to work and education, and many more. Everyone is entitled to these rights without discrimination, unquote. Thus, the ideological message of the United Nations Declaration is to say there is nothing you have to do to acquire these rights. You just have to simply be human. Imagine if this belief was generally integrated and practiced in every aspect and organizational system and structure in the United States and countries all over the world. How would our lives be? If America is truly committed to living up to her identity as a beacon of light in the world and dedicated to ensuring that her young 246-year-old experiment becomes a more perfect union, it is imperative that she join forces with patriarchs of all stripes and colors and dismantle the systemic patriarchal, oppressive, and misogynistic structures and systems that perpetuate gender inequality. Do questions give us more insight than answers? I believe questions sometimes give us more insight into the answers we seek. For example, the following questions open the door for a conversation on patriarchy as a man-made social construct with no biological facts to support it. How patriarchy was used to yield power over women and other marginalized groups. What if the story of Adam and Eve was told differently than the misinterpretation by the founders of the American government and church? 2, what if the founders interpreted the story to illustrate that both Adam and Eve disobeyed God's command? In other words, what if they, instead of blaming Eve for the downfall of humanity, held both Adam and Eve accountable? 3, what if they depicted the Garden of Eden as a beautiful place sanctioned by God for humanity to live in harmony and introduce love of humanity as the foundational undergirding for establishing all institutions, politics, and social structures and systems? 4, what if the story was taught as a message to encourage humans to live together in harmony, love, and respect for animals, nature, and the environment? 5, what if instead of demonizing, objectifying, calling women misogynistic and nefarious names, men were taught at an early age the value of women, and the importance of loving, honoring, protecting, fighting for, and celebrating them? 6, what if educational, political, and religious institutions taught that men were born of a woman as a preamble to what it means to be human and equal to men instead of women being an appendage to them, that both symbolize God's dream of humanity? What if the framers of the Declaration of Independence, instead of excluding women, African Americans, Native Americans, and men who do not own land, wrote that we hold these truths to be evident that all people are created equal and endowed with inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, instead of all men? 8, what if the tables were turned and women were the founding mothers of the American government and church, and wrote the Declaration of Independence? What if they excluded men from human and civil rights, denying them voice and representation? Would men send a message to women framers? Remember the men? 9, what if our politics were driven by our humanity? Three final questions for you to ponder. 1. Have you ever lost hope, similar to Chayani's poem in the beginning of this chapter, where she laments no framework for equality can remedy the asphyxiated majorities? There is no redemption from the swine and greed. Freedom is not a goal we'll ever achieve. Or do you share the sentiment by prolific poet Bob McNeill's poem, A Song for Sheroes, also at the beginning of this chapter, in which he offers hope and heralds women make men comprehend, and one day in time, gender mistreatment will end? 2, how do you identify yourself as human first or woman? 3, what do you believe moving forward is best for the survival of the United States and the world? Men and women working together in equal partnership and equal rights, or women rising to the height of power and leading the world? And 4, do you believe you are woke to the social injustice permeating our world, or are you asleep and turn a blind eye and live like you are safe in a matrix-controlled life? My closing thought, I leave you with this quote by Sergeant Shriver, who was an American diplomat, politician, and activist. His quote underscores the thesis of this chapter, that both men and women must be liberated from patriarchal societies. Quote, there really is no such thing as women's issue that isn't also a men's issue. Real equality would be as liberating for men as for women. Men are imprisoned by the very stereotypes that oppress women. What's involved in this struggle is no less than the most profound of all questions. What does it mean to be human?